I will call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division to order. A quorum is present. Representative Becker Finn, have you reviewed the minutes from March 19th?
I have, Mr. Chair. I would move the minutes.
Representative Becker Finn moves the minutes for March 19th. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Aye. Minutes are approved. First, we have House File 1135. And members and guests, we have three committees going on that members are going to be going back and forth for. So I may relinquish the chair because Representative Claflin and I actually have a bill up right about the same time. So I will move that House File 1135 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Marquardt, will you please present your bill?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. So House File 1135 would deal with increasing the base appropriation for the Red River Flood Damage Reduction Work Group, basically from $264,000 to $364,000. And, you know, as you know, this year in the Red River Valley, there's going to be flooding. Hopefully, it doesn't get too bad, but the recent National Weather Service report said there's about a 10% chance of record flooding actually in the Fargo-Moorhead area and even up towards Grand Forks. So the work of this work group is really important. And what they do, and they are formed in 1998, is really coordinate activities and improvements that are being made in the Red River, so everyone's kind of on the same page, and that there's a coordinated effort when you deal with flood mitigation in the Red River. So I have Ms. Lisa Frenette here, if she could explain more details on the bill.
Ms. Frenette.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Lisa Frenette, and I represent the Red River Watershed Management Board and the Flood Damage Reduction Work Group. As Representative Marquardt has alluded to, the Flood Damage Reduction Work Group was formed in 1998 to help address the issues to flood-related activities and how we would make sure that the flood-related activities were contained with things like retention ponds, ring dikes, etc., and formed a group consisting of several state or governmental entities, including the DNR, the PCA, the Board of Soil and Water Resources, as well as local governments like the Red River Board and the watershed districts that are part of the Red River Board. The work group, as I said, ensures full implementation of the Red River Mediation Agreement, along with the Red River Watershed Management Board, who is the fiscal agent to the Flood Damage Reduction Work Group. We're, as Representative Marquardt said, asking for an increase in our base funding support from $264,000 to $364,000. This funding provides support for a Red River Basin coordinator position jointly with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. The budget items directly support to develop and implement projects through the Flood Damage Work Group project teams to assist in flood damage reduction throughout the Red River Basin. Projects that have benefited from the Flood Damage Work Group include the Black River Impoundment Project, which is part of the Thief River Falls West Side Diversion in the Red Lake Watershed District. This was done to make sure that new businesses like DigiKey didn't have to worry about flooding. Other projects included the Goose Prairie Marsh Wildlife Management Area Enhancement Project, quite a long title, in the Wild Rice Watershed District. Several of these projects are also partially funded by the Natural Resources Conservation Service, the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, as well as state programs like the Outdoor Heritage Council. In 2018, the Flood Damage Reduction Work Group dispersed $143,000 to the seven watershed districts in project team support, and with each watershed district matching 50% of the needs. The total request for project support throughout the Flood Damage Work Group exceeded $600,000, which far surpassed the disbursements. This demonstrates the need to increase the base from $264,000 to $364,000. As an aside, this new amount was a base appropriation before the recession when it was cut, so we're not asking for money that we hadn't been receiving. To wrap up, the Red River Watershed Management Board and Flood Damage Work Group respectfully request an increase in their base funding to continue this important support.
Are there any questions for the testifier? Or for Representative Marquardt? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention the Thief River project that you mentioned, Ms. Frenette. It was really a cooperative effort amongst a whole bunch of people. There was a road project that was going to be going on there, and we were able to get some things expedited. But it was really a worthwhile project, and I appreciate the work that everybody did to get that to come forward. And Representative Marquardt, I notice you don't have Representative Hornstein on here as a bill. Is that because there's nothing in here about tax havens?
That's correct, Representative.
Any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Representative Marquardt, any closing remarks?
Well, just thank you, and I want to thank all the committees in the past in the state of Minnesota for all the investment they put in the Red River Valley, because they're just talking to Moorhead, even at the current flood stage where 10 years ago they would have had to produce 2 million sandbags. Like this year, it's maybe 200,000, and you know, even at those very high levels. So thank you so much, and thank you and the committee for consideration.
I will renew my motion that House File 1135 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The bill is laid over.
Thank you very much.
Representative Eklund, if you would take the chair.
On the agenda is House File 2432, Representative Cantrell. I'll move that House File 2432 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Cantrell, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. So House File 2432 is a bill that provides for $250,000 total over the next 2 fiscal years. And one-time grant money to the Board of Water and Soil Resources for a grant to the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District to defray the annual cost of operating and maintaining sites for dredged spoil. The river contains a navigation channel that extends about 15 miles upriver, and it provides the lowest cost transportation for agricultural goods and saves about $22 million annually compared to other transportation alternatives. I will also say that the watershed district floodplains contain about 20,000 acres of regional parks, and it is a magnificent area for recreational activities. I will also say it contains the site of the historic Fort Cargill in Savage, which 1942 built naval ships that played a role in the war efforts. That's a little bit of Savage history right there. With that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your time and the committee's time today, and I will turn it over to my testifier.
Welcome, Ms. Frenette. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Frenette, still. And I'd like to thank you for the moment to talk about the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District appropriation this year. I'd like to supplement Representative Cantrell's opening remarks on the state of the river. This urban recreational oasis and vital transportation artery is threatened by high loads of sediment from upstream in the Minnesota River. The Minnesota River continues to experience increasingly significant water quality and quantity problems, according to data from the United States Geological Services, and shows even more sediment on the lower portion of the river than previously thought. The navigation channel that Representative Cantrell alluded to benefit the state of Minnesota by providing an efficient, economic, and environmentally friendly way to get Minnesota's agricultural products back and forth to different markets around the world. It also provides an efficient, economic, and environmentally friendly way for commodities like fertilizer, road salt, and aggregate to come to Minnesota to benefit the areas far beyond the boundaries of the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District. On average, 1.3 million tons of grain and soybeans, plus half as much tonnage of other commodities, are shipped through the channel each year. Cost saving is about $22 million compared to alternatives like trucking. The Lower Minnesota Watershed District, besides being responsible for water quality within its boundaries, is also responsible for storage, handling, and transportation of dredged material. The cost for managing the dredged material most of which comes from upstream or outside the district, is raised through higher taxes across the district or fees on businesses that benefit the navigation channel. Mr. Chair and committee members, when the channel was first authorized by Congress, dredging was needed every 5 years. Now the channel must be dredged once, sometimes twice a summer, so that these important transportation methods can be used or utilized. It is inequitable to continue to place the sole burden of dredging on the channel of such a small group of taxpayers. The Minnesota River, as I outlined earlier, is a main mode of commodity transportation. We respectfully request that the committee supports the appropriation of $250,000 for the next biennium while we continue to work with the Upper Minnesota River Basin on the best solutions for sediment and erosion loss and issues.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifiers? Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question. I understand the need for the dredging. Or the money for the dredging, but I was wondering, I heard you say that it used to be once every 5 years that dredging needed to be done. Now it may be more than once a year. What is driving the change that it needs to be dredged so much more often?
Yes,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my understanding is that there is more runoff from the land further up the river, which is down the river or down south, that's moving forward, and it is contributing to the erosion and the runoff.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And at what point in time can you give me some of the history as to as that starts being up, what the time frame was? I'd be curious to know from beginning to where we are now what's been happening, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Fisher, I'd be delighted to get you some more information or timeline on.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Any other? Representative Sandell.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I noticed in the information of the bill it talks about the placement site at on Vernon Avenue South in the city of Savage. I have a couple questions. One, is that going to be sustainable? Is that the one site where the dredge material is deposited now?
Ms. Burnett.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sandell. It is sustainable. We are able to sell some of the dredged material to be used for construction purposes, and so every summer, you know, it builds up, and then we sell it off, and so the site is sustainable. And it's actually a beautiful kind of wetland in and around there.
Mr. Chair, when you dredge up the river, are there contaminants which are freed and go further down the river or cause the water to be even more polluted?
Ms. Burnett.
Mr. Chair and Representative Sandell, I do believe right here I have an answer for that. There are nitrates and phosphorus that has been found flowing further down the river. It is impeding areas like Lake Pepin and the mouth of the Minnesota where it meets with the Mississippi and the St. Croix River downstream. And Lake Pepin, from what I understand, is finding it more difficult to get just small boats up and down the river that are recreational.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, ma'am.
Any other questions with Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious to know the total cost per year for what is currently going on. And it's coming from the local taxpayers, Representative Cantrell.
Ms. Burnett or Representative Cantrell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, it is my understanding, and if I'm looking at my notes correctly, it is about $143,000 a year. Occasionally we have the Army Corps of Air Engineers come in and do it, but they will not always dredge the site. But I can get more information on that if you'd like it.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's what my next question was going to be. Do you get any federal assistance for the dredging? And it seems like you do.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, yes, occasionally we do, but my understanding is that the Army Corps of Engineers does not always come out and do it.
Representative right. Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then you said that sometimes the dredge is sold, to take it off-site to make that site where it's going more sustainable for longer term. Where does the revenue from the sale go to?
Ms. Fernandez.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian, the revenue to that goes to offset the costs that the Lower Minnesota River pays for storing and dredging the material right now. At this point, it's not enough to cover everything.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, like, when you're doing the dredging and you find, like, gold coins, you get those too?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I keep those. I pocket them. I'm going to tell you, I found no gold coins yet.
Any other questions? Ms. Burnett, let me know. I'll come and help you dig them out. Any other questions from the committee? Is there anybody from the audience like to testify before for or against this bill? Representative Cantrell, any closing remarks?
Just thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for your time today, and I appreciate your support.
I will renew my motion that House File 2432 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over.
Thank you.
House File 584, Representative Sandine. Representative Sundin moves that House File 584 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Sundin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is my motion. 584 appropriates money to the Explore Minnesota account to reinvest in tourism expansion in Minnesota. I think. One number that everyone should remember is for every $1 invested in state tourism at the advertising, it generates an estimated $9 in state and local taxes and $92 in traveler spending. So this is a good investment. There's an absolute positive return for the state of Minnesota, and I do have a testifier or two.
Mr. Pizek, please, if I got your name right, please.
Good job. Thank you, Mr.
For the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Sarah Pizek with Pizek Capital Solutions. I represent a group called the Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition. It's a grassroots organization which was formed in 2013 for the purpose of advocating for tourism funding. So I want to thank Representative Sundin and the many co-authors for sponsoring House File 584, which will provide a funding increase for Explore Minnesota tourism budget and one-time funding to continue the highly successful events funding grant program. You have a handout with a lot of tourism facts, as well as you should have all received the annual Explore Minnesota tourism cereal box delivered to your offices earlier this session, which has tourism facts on a county-by-county basis on the back. We like to say that tourism is the front door to economic growth. Tourism is a $15.5 billion Minnesota industry and supports 270,000 full and part-time leisure and hospitality jobs across the state. The face of tourism is diverse, from small family-run businesses, century-old resorts, to major Minnesota corporations. Tourism generates $969 million in sales tax revenue annually. Tourism growth is fueled by promotion funding, but Minnesota continues to be substantially outspent by our competitors. Minnesota ranks 22nd nationwide, which is below our regional competitors, including Illinois, Michigan, Missouri, Wisconsin, and South Dakota. The average state tourism budget for the nation is $18.6 million annually, and currently Minnesota's annual budget is $14.3 million for tourism. So funding included in this bill for the tourism budget will provide increased support for local community marketing efforts through the co-op grant program. You'll hear more about that from some of the other testifiers. Increased marketing opportunities of unique Minnesota travel destinations and the expansion of the Only in Minnesota marketing campaign. In the past, the legislature has appropriated funding for the community events grant program in 2016 and 2017. And this has been a very successful program which has supported events across the state. Governor Walz's budget includes funding recommendation for this program of $1 million in both fiscal year 20 and $1 million in fiscal year 21. I just want to highlight a few of the events that have happened or will happen in Minnesota from the past first two grant rounds for the events funding. the Cook County Norpine Fat Bike Classic, the Detroit Lakes Ice Festival, the Roseville Revival Summer Festival, Winona's Live at the Levee. This summer in August in Baudette, the Lake of the Woods 2019 World Plowing Championship is an international competition that's going to bring together the world's best plowers, and that's P-L-O-U-G-H-E-R. I'm not from a farming community. And they're coming from over 30 countries to Baudette in August, and they received a grant for this competition that wouldn't have been possible without the past funding. Otter Tail County had the world's largest on-ice Super Bowl party last year that they received national attention for. There's a synchronized ice skating championship in South St. Paul, which will be happening this April. And in 2020, Minnesota will host the World Cup cross-country ski competition, which is going to be really exciting with U.S. Olympic gold medal winner Jesse Diggins from the Stillwater area. So the event's funding has really proven to be successful. The grant runs out before all the applications can even be processed, so we really hope funding can be continued for that, as well as an increase in the general fund-based budget to bring us a little closer to our competitors. So now I'm going to turn it over to Terry Mattson from Visit St. Paul and Bob Barton from Hidden Haven Resort in Cohasset.
Thank you, Ms. Pasek. Just stick around in case there's a questions. So, Mr. Mattson, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Terry Mattson. I'm the president and CEO of Visit St. Paul and the River Center, here on behalf of Visit St. Paul and many, many others throughout the state. We encourage the additional investment of more than $5 million annually to other amounts already appropriated to explore Minnesota's base budget, along with another $1 million annually for new events. The base budget funds marketing campaigns like hashtag only in Minnesota, True North. These are examples that increase Minnesota's brand recognition, engagement, and also visitorship. Marketing is a critical investment, not so much a cost, bringing as much as a 10-to-1 return on investment from our campaigns. And there's more opportunity as we aren't even close to saturating our markets. Increased investment means more co-op grant programs and joint marketing opportunities for cities across the state of Minnesota. Incidentally, the base appropriation currently generates $14.2 million in private sector match. Enhancing investment means more jobs. For every $1,000 invested in marketing, one job is created, helping support a young and diverse workforce. These investments benefit Minnesotans throughout the state. Having spent 3 decades in Duluth tourism before coming to the capital city, I can speak directly to the fact Explore Minnesota helps Greater Minnesota and the Metro as well. There are no regional divides. All of your constituents will benefit. I'm passionate about this investment because I see it working every single day. We're an industry fueled by promotion, and state dollars will always be tight. We understand that. But tourism marketing is one of the very few ways where enhancing appropriations grow, not reduce, the state's bottom line. It's well documented that investing in Explore Minnesota rewards state government with more new tax revenues. There's also the positive halo effect. Promotion not only lifts visitation, but also drives business development, things like real estate taxes, and even things like college and university recruitment. Tourism opens doors for other sectors, and it leads the way for all of Minnesota. We drive impressive metrics like $15 billion in gross sales, $966 million in state sales tax. Incidentally, that's 18% of total sales tax revenue, and more than 270,000 jobs. The spring-summer advertising campaign generated 3.5 million incremental trips and $415 million in incremental spending. That's very real money, and that's very, very impressive. But this business isn't getting any easier. Competition for our visitors is fierce. Competing states continually invest more because they see the return as well. And media costs are steadily increasing. Technological innovation has fractured the consumer landscape. Frankly, we need to be in more places to attract more visitors. Events. The events funding program touches every corner of this state, shining spotlights on communities small and large. Events drive first-time visitors and increase visitor spending. In addition to generating new revenues, these events create civic pride and leadership. Organizers with a strong sense of purpose increase collaboration and enhance quality of life. These efforts make Minnesota a better place to live, work, and play. We need to continue generating jobs and additional revenues. We need to continue to provide opportunities for all Minnesotans. We need to bring in new tax revenues. Supporting House File 548 supports community for residents and visitors alike. Tourism is critical to this state's future. Please support this bill with your votes. Your communities will thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Batson. Mr. Barton, please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name's Bob Barton, and I own Hidden Haven Resort in Cohasset. I'm here not only to represent Hidden Haven Resort, but also the community of Minnesota Resorts. We are an organization of mom-and-pop resorts throughout the state, and being resort owners, we're an independent group. You put five of us in a room, you're going to get 10 different opinions about what the price of toilet paper should be. But there's one thing that unites us, and that is our support of additional funding for Explore Minnesota Tourism. EMT provides us, as small mom-and-pop resorts, we have limited marketing budgets, the ability to leverage our marketing dollars. Few of us have the resources to go market in Chicago, but EMT is able to do advertising buys in those markets that we can co-opt into and actually get some exposure. And I'm a firm believer that dollars from outside the state are the best dollars. They're new ones, they stay in our economy longer, and we really need to pursue them. Also with the event funding, we have two events every year in Grand Rapids. We have Tall Timber Days and, of course, Wizard of Oz Festival. Julie Garland Festival. We all benefit from that. Oddly enough, it's amazing how many people come up to see Judy Garland Museum when they have the Judy Garland Festival. And these things benefit from the co-op or from the event dollars. It's a real benefit to us. We are major employers in our areas. In my county, Itasca County, it's always been taconite, timber, and tourism are the three pillars of the economy. And when the mines aren't going or they're not cutting trees, then we're the top dog. But it's really, we couldn't do it without EMT. They are a partner, whether it's being part of the visitor guides that are distributed throughout the states, having our information at the rest stops as you come into the state, the ability to move our marketing information out to those areas is something that on our own very, very few of us could do. So the last thing I'd like to say is that EMT has been the best partner in terms of marketing and support that the Minnesota resort industry could possibly ask for, and we are in full support of House File 584.
Thank you, Mr. Barton. Is there any member questions for the testifiers? Representative Sandell, sorry.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Information suggests that this request is above and beyond the base of the governor's recommendation. What was the governor? By the way, I firmly support tourism and spent time earning my college tuition at a resort during the summer. So, but what was the governor's recommendation here?
Sure, Mr. Chair and members, the governor's recommendation was basically flat at the base. He had a small increase for some pension increase, and then he did increase one-time appropriation of $2 million total for the events funding grant program. So $1 million for the first year of the biennium and another $1 million in the second year.
Thank you.
So this bill, this bill which has an increase in the base is above the governor's recommendation.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for the testifier? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned the plowing contest. That's going to be on Arneson's property south of Adept. And former Representative Hackbarth is familiar with the Arneson family, and I'm sure when you're done with the plowing contest, you can go up to Rock Harbor and have something to eat there, and then they'll probably even take you fishing. So have a fun time.
Sounds good.
Any other questions for the testifiers? Anybody from the audience care to testify for or against this bill? Come on up, sir. Please identify yourself for the record.
Chairman. My name is Mark Quitchy. I serve as president of Global Minnesota. And I thank you for this opportunity to say that in my work, both prior and Secretary of State and working to bring a World Expo and in helping to connect Minnesota to the world, the thing that I notice is that the more people hear about Minnesota, see the beauty, see the excitement, see the things that are happening, the more they want to learn more about our state and the more likely they are to come. And so when I heard there was this opportunity, this bill was coming forward, I knew it would be something that would help in many other parts of the work of bringing people to Minnesota, whether it's students to our schools, tourists to our communities, conferences, different kind of organized gatherings. This bill will be a very strong support. And I want to end by echoing the notion that Explore Minnesota has really been a fantastic partner for all kinds of organizations and all kinds of events. And we are, you know, one of the kind of long-term thinking is how great it is to know that that institution is going to be there. So an increase in the base and making that a more firm and a more solid financial base going forward is something that can help us in the long run do better planning for not just tourism, but also in visitors, exchanges, and many other events that bring in those outside dollars. So thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Ritchie. Any questions?
Thank you very much.
Final words, Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You've heard the numbers. I think we've got widespread support for this bill within this chamber and that other chamber across the street. So I think a green vote on this or a affirmative vote on this is just restores confidence in the tourism industry in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Sundin. Representative Sundin renews his motion that House File 584 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. You didn't have to leave, Representative Sundin. You're up next. House File 800. This is the bill we've all been looking forward to. Representative Sundin moves that House File 800 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Sundin, please present your bill.
That is my motion. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't imagine some of the dazzling urbanites on the committee and in the room would even start to appreciate this bill, but those of us that grew up on gravel roads and that have been washed out by beaver, the water, uncontrolled water due to beaver dams flooding or breaking and destroying roads, it's a real burden to counties and townships as well, and I have testifiers to it, testify to that fact.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Gregory J. Bruneau, Land Commissioner for Carleton County, also here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of County Land Commissioners, who manage 2.8 million acres of tax forfeited lands in northern Minnesota. By the way, Robbinsdale class of 76. I grew up down here, so I'm a transplant. Lost my hair to Mr. Henning, Mr. Perfect, and junior high wrestling, but that's irrelevant now. So as you've heard from other earlier speakers today, talking about the benefits to Minnesota of tourism dollars and transportation. those of us who manage lands in northern Minnesota include the counties, include the DNR, and villages and other units of government. Whilst we all do levy some dollars through our highway and bridge funds for beaver control through incidental forced labor to go take out the occasional dam, plug culvert, what here or not, the range is anywhere from $1,000 for a county in northwest Minnesota whose county seat is Bagley. I won't name the name of the county. I did not get a response from International Falls. I won't name that county. However, a county's seat of in Aiken, I won't name that county, they were the high winners as far as dollars spent on levying for beaver removal. The highway department there spends $25,000 a year just in regular cost to manage their roads, just the county dirt roads. They also have an additional expenditure of up to another $10,000 to $15,000 that's unbudgeted for because they don't know at any given time how the beaver activity is going to be. So they have to find those funds from another source, be it the county board's general fund or take it from other unused funds to fund that. Carleton County's in the same boat. We levy about $15,000 a year through Forest Fiber to manage our beavers on county and township roads that we manage. But last year we had a contract out for an additional $22,000 for special projects where we just had an influx of beaver in a certain northwestern township. And I have my county commissioner who represents that district. He'll probably testify later on to that effect. But, in the 15 counties that I queried this afternoon prior to this, the levy dollars for beaver control through forest labor averages $195,000 per year across 15 northern counties. That's an average. I got a response of 7, so I extrapolate out beyond acres. For those of us who manage the land, not including DNR lands, but the tax forfeited lands, the county fee lands, who do not get one dime of tax levy dollars, we are prohibited through a statute that, and also through the Minnesota Constitution. We do not get levy dollars. We spent another $110,000 across 15 northeastern counties to manage beaver problems. What's the impact of this if we didn't manage it? First off, as previous speaker said, you go to northern Minnesota to recreate. Tourism is big up there. One of the things we forgot to mention of the three T's that an earlier speaker mentioned is a fourth T called transportation. Transportation is the lifeblood of this continent, this state, whatever. Nothing happens without good transportation. If you can't move a good from point A to point B because of a road's underwater, a road's washed out from beaver problems, for example, the cost of that good goes up, and it also jeopardizes the local businesses that are producing the good. It could be beets, it could be rye, it could be timber. All of that stuff is impacted heavily by the cost of transportation. So let's not forget the cost of transportation. How do we keep our transportation costs low? Good roads. Is a road underwater because a culvert is plugged that we can't get to it? Nope, that may mean a reroute of up to 5-6 miles. More if you're in Aiken County. It could be a 15-mile reroute because 1/4-mile road is underwater. So there's a huge cost to that. So even though we spend these dollars to try to it, the exponential blow-up of that because of lost revenues due to increased transportation costs is horrendous. Then let's take a good weekend. Let's say there's a weekend in November when I think there's more people heading north on the freeway than going south. And I'm sure Mr. Meyer can attest to how many dollars are spent on deer opener, how many people, I think it's half a million that left. I can't do that, so we'll have Ms. Garlitz do it. Sorry, Lily. But, you know, we have half a million people coming up to, well, not half a million, we'll say 450,000, because I know the 50,000 that go south actually get the good deer hunting. Spend a lot of money. If they can't get to their deer shack, who's the first person to hear about it? Not me, but my county commissioner in the back. And he'll tell you that his phone is continuously ringing off the phone 3 weeks prior to deer season. For colors. Many people drive up the North Shore to go look at the colors in the month of September. When do beavers start getting active? September. They're starting to put up their winter food. They're starting to dam up waters. You try to go across the Honeymoon Trail on the Superior National Forest, where I used to work. And if it's underwater, you hear about it at the Tofty Ranger Station, you hear about it at the Duluth Ranger Station. It's a huge impediment to tourism. Some other things that I would like to bring up, some other transportation. One thing to look at also here is that the state does have programs in place. We're asking for anything. The state does have programs in place to recompense people affected by, let's say, a large cervid in northwestern Minnesota. If it goes to a fence up there and takes it down, I won't name the cervid, but I tried to get my license and it's impossible to get that elk tape. The DNR also is a pass-through agency for federal dollars in case that same area up there has an influx of the large canids that happen to roam northern Minnesota, and they're actually probably getting down to Cambridge right now. If a large canid comes into a farmer's field, takes out a calf, takes out a prize bull, takes out whatever, guess what? There's pass-through dollars through the DNR to pay for that loss. We're asking for the same type of recompense. So we're experiencing loss that's over and above normal losses that we can plan for. So we're asking for help in this. And, you know, while maybe, you know, it might be $250,000 might be what we're looking at least for 15 counties, but this extends to all 87 counties in Minnesota. You can't go anyplace around here where there's a creek where you won't find some beaver activity. So we really would like to have this bill passed on behalf of all the counties, all the townships, all the other local jurisdictions, because the critters are causing us lost revenue through increased costs in road maintenance, which impacts transportation, which impacts tourism. have nothing more.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner, you care to add anything to this? Or?
Add just a couple comments. This
come on up, state your name for the record, and proceed.
Okay, my name is Gary Peterson. I'm county commissioner for Tarleton County. I represent the western part of the county, and I've been commissioner now for just over 6 years, and one of the common complaints or calls that I get is dealing with the beaver problem and affecting the roads. And I know I have some property, you know, in Corona Township, and this summer I was calling the county engineer because I couldn't get to my property because the beavers had dammed it up completely and the road was just completely washed out. And you know, it took a while. They had to go I don't know how far back in the woods to, you know, to clean out the beaver dam. But you know, I just see this really affecting us. The other thing that I attend monthly is with Aiken County is the big sandy watershed, and you wouldn't believe how many times that is brought up at the big sandy watershed, and I'm sure you know representative has heard that too about the beaver problem, you know, dealing with Aiken County. But you know, we just think, you know, wildlife is managed, you know, by the DNR. We think maybe the beaver should be put in that category, and because it is a cost, especially to some of us northern counties, you know, to deal with this problem. So we would appreciate your support on that.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson. Any questions for the testifiers from the committee? Oh, we got one more testifier. I'm sorry, Representative. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good evening, Chair and members. I'm Brian Martinson, Environment and Natural Resources Policy Analyst with the Association of Minnesota Counties. You've had a thorough explanation of the issue, so I would just like to share with you that AMC does have a policy platform that supports funding support for local governments to deal with beaver damage control issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifiers? Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More of a comment. I don't know if anybody's here from the Association of Townships. Maybe not. There's another group that spends a. There's three things that our local townships do up where I live. They fix the roads, maintain their township roads. They pay for the fire protection through property tax, and protect people from beaver. And I'm not kidding, because we're blessed with lakes everywhere. And it is a huge cost. We've got a standing working group in Aiken County of township officials, county engineer, environmental services, the whole nine yards, that deals with this problem. And we need a way to take a little bit of the load off, because this is all coming out of Hyde on property taxes. And you know, whether we're in the right fund here to fund this, I, you know, I'm not sure about that, but it is more than sounds kind of humorous, but there's nothing funny about it. We've lost critical township roads for 2.5-3 weeks because a beaver dam broke, took the road out, and by the time we got the whole thing put back in there, and it's no joke. Fire trucks and ambulances were deterred by 12 miles, that's not, you wouldn't put up with that in your small city. I mean, it takes a long time for that service to arrive in rural Minnesota. You add another 12 miles, that's basically more than 12 minutes, because those are not 60 mile an hour roads. So it's a big deal. And I want to thank Representative Sundin for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Look. Any other questions for Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a process question, first of all. There's obviously some policy in this bill, and I think the motion tonight was to lay it over for possible inclusion.
That's correct, Representative
Fabian. I mean, I respectfully suggest that it should go to the Environment Policy Committee. Just because there's policy in here, and I don't know if it has gotten a hearing in the other body or not, but I'm concerned about deadlines again. That's multiple times I brought that issue forward. Then the other thing along with this, is there a fiscal note? Have you asked for a fiscal note on this representative Sunday?
No, sir, I have not. As of yet.
As of, okay. So, Representative Sundin, I can't, I hear what you're doing with regards to Beaver, but I think you're probably going to battle more with the DNR here than you are with the Beavers. I'm not sure, but, okay. Because in Section 1, Subdivision 2, you talk about the costs associated with Beavers or dams being reimbursed. Okay, that's by the DNR. But in the first part of that paragraph, it says the commissioner may issue special permits. I'm wondering if the wording should be changed, because if it says the commissioner may issue permits and they know there's going to be a cost incurred, you're a smart guy. You can probably figure that out.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think a one-word switch might work out quite well there. If you have any other...
Is that a moral amendment?
If you have any other suggestions for amendments, I think this is still a work in progress, and after hearing from the DNR on this, I think there might be some other amendments that might spring out of this.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, yeah, I understand the process or the problems with associated with Beavers. I'm assuming that DNR does support this, but I would like to hear that affirmation.
Representative Fabian, they're raising their hand and chomping at the bit to get up here. So, Lisa, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Pat Rivers, Deputy Director for the Division of Fish and Wildlife with the DNR. And every November, when I go up to my deer camp, I go over a washboard road that is washed out from beaver damage. So we recognize that beaver are a concern across the state. The last fiscal note we did on this was in 2017, and the estimated cost would be about $1.28 million to the Game and Fish Fund. Now, there would be concern from us that this would be considered a diversion from our federal aid program, our Pittman-Robertson dollars, and that would put about $18 to $22 million at risk if indeed we were to use the Game and Fish Fund for this source. I heard one of the previous testifiers talk about a large cervid in northwest Minnesota being compensated by the state, and I believe that is through the general fund, through the Department of Agriculture, as well as wolf damage. So we certainly recognize the need to work on controlling beaver. We work with trappers, and we work with people who have nuisance issues all the time. We just think there might be a better funding source.
Thank you, Mr. Rivers. Any questions for Mr. Rivers? I just have one comment. I understand where you're coming from. I'd like the DNR to figure this out, because that $1.28 million looks kind of small when it looks at what we do for deer hunting and other activities in Minnesota. So, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this takes me back several years, but we have been wrestling with beavers around here for a long time, and I can remember conversations in the hallway with former Chair McNamara talking to Colonel Rodman Smith, and it wasn't a pleasant conversation. And I just wish that DNR would just turn over the control of these to the counties and let them take care of the problems as they arise. And I don't know why that can't happen.
Mr. Rivers.
Mr. Chair, we do have some language that is, I believe, in a current bill that does look to streamline some of these to get the blanket permits that we always give out. To take care of that, to streamline that. So we are working on that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to see the language, and I'd actually like to see it move rather than to hear, but we are working on that. It seems like we are working on that.
Mr. Chair, today in the Senate, sections 11 through 16, language was removed in the Senate bill today, so it is moving.
Good. Thank you.
Representative Fabian. Okay. Anybody else from the audience care to testify before it hits this bill? Last words, Representative Sundin.
Damn.
Representative Sundin renews his motion that House File 800 be laid over with possible inclusion. The bill is laid over.
It's up to the chair.
Yeah.
Representative Eklund, if you are ready, we will take up House File 402. Representative Eklund, I'll move your bill, House File 402, to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Eklund, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 402 and members is a project for the Crane Lake Township, one of the five gateway communities to Voyageurs National Park. This project is something that will be in conjunction with our efforts to build a visitor center, at National Park Visitor Center, and campground for the township. Currently, Crane Lake is the only gateway community that does not have a park, visitor, and information center. With me to testify on the merits of this bill is Lori Sanborn, I apologize, the owner of Hamburg Marine in Crane Lake.
Can you please introduce yourself for the record?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lori Sanborn, and I'm a resident of Crane Lake and a member of the Crane Lake Visitor and Tourism Bureau. And my husband and I are fourth-generation owner-operators of Hamburg's Marina, where we serve vacationers visiting Voyageurs National Park, the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness, and the Quetico Provincial Park, as well as cabin owners adjacent to the Voyageurs National Park. Voyageurs was established in 1975, and our community was identified as one of four gateway communities to the park, as you stated. And three of these communities have visitor centers, International Falls, Cabtogama, and Ash River. Crane Lake is the only entrance community to the park that does not have a visitor center for its guests. Crane Lake is the southernmost and eastern entrance to the park and accommodates many visitors going to the park as well as traveling to the BWCA and Quetico. Visitors sometimes get frustrated when they come to our community and have no access to a visitor center or permits, or when visitors try to park at the current public access, which is next to Hamburg's, is full. Our community has participated in several community action plans and public hearings with the assistance of the National Park Service, the University of Minnesota, and the State Department of Tourism, and establishing a visitor center has always risen to the top of these community action meetings. With the assistance from the LCCMR, the town has already purchased land for this center, which includes over 30 acres. In addition, the Minnesota DNR has already purchased land for the boat ramp and public access immediately adjacent to the visitor center. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I believe in front of you is the first edition of our plan for the new visitor center and campground and improvements to the DNR boat ramp. House File 402 requests $1.2 million for the DNR boat ramp and $1 million for the site work preparation for a visitor center and campground. This is part of an estimated total project of around $6.2 million for the whole thing. And the town is seeking other funds, including further contributions from the township and federal funding as well. And long-term, the town is negotiating a lease to the Park Service through the General Service Administration, similar to the lease at International Falls. I know this is a lot of money, and our community appreciates your consideration. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee? And is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill? Representative Eklund, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the reason that that picture isn't in your folders is all on me, so I apologize for that. And I apologize, Lori, for that. But anyway, this is a good project. As Ms. Sanford said, the DNR supports this project, and I appreciate the consideration.
Thank you.
And thank you. I will renew my motion that House File 402 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over.
That's okay.
And Representative Eklund, would you like to present House File 251?
Yes.
I'll move that House File 251 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Eklund, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House File 251 is the section of Lake Vermilion State Park that was destined to be part of the ATV part of the park, and it was always been envisioned to be ATV accessible. It is separated from the lakeside of the park section by Highway 169, and when completed, this park will have access to the ATV Prospector ATV Trail, and will provide further access to other existing ATV trails in the area. And I've talked to the DNR about this bill, and they know where we're at and what we're trying to do with this, so that's what we're trying to get done.
Are there questions from the committee? Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify for or against this bill? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When I look back at my notes, when this bill passed out of policy committee, we had an amendment that would have expanded ATV use at the Hayes Lake State Park in Roseau County. And Director Leversedge testified that day, and I see he's here. I'm curious if I could call Director Leversedge to the table, please.
Can you please state your name for the record?
Sure. Madam Chair, and Representative Fabian. First of all, my name is Phil Leversedge. I'm the Deputy Director, so don't give me quite so much credit as being the Director, but I'm the Assistant Director for the Division of Parks and Trails with the DNR.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm only going to take a minute. Deputy Director Leversedge, at the time that we had the conversation about Hayes Lake, you left me with the impression that you were going to have some conversations with the folks, either the Friends of Hayes Lake State Park or the Roseau County Commissioners. Tell me the extent of the conversations that you've had with them about possibly changing the designation or finding a solution for the concern that they brought forward through me and Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, we are in the middle of a public engagement process around just that issue in the Beltrami State Forest and Hayes Lake area. This fall we held public meetings in Roseau and in St. Paul, and we did an online survey where we gathered about 1,400 comments on what recreationalists would like to see in the Beltrami State Forest in the way of amenities, both at Hayes Lake and other possible developments within the forest. Those recommendations have been put together by staff and are being reviewed by our commissioner's office, and we are expecting recommendations coming out of that soon.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The public meeting was in Warrow, not Roseau, but that's just...
My apologies.
That's not a big deal. That wasn't my question, though. I know what has happened. I'm asking you, what conversations have you had either with Roseau County Commissioners or the Friends of Hayes Lake State Park since February 18th?
Mr. Leverage.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, since our last hearing, we have not had conversations.
Thank you.
Are there other questions from the committee? Anyone else in the audience wishes to testify for or against the bill? Right, Representative Eklund, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is going to be a nice addition to our state park system. The ATV community is looking forward to it, and they are... I believe it's the new. There's going to be one of the new economic drivers for our tourism industry. I appreciate the consideration.
Thank you. I renew my motion that House File 251 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. And then House File 1772. I'll move House File 1772 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And Representative Eklund, I believe you have an amendment. If I
I will move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Would you like to speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment is going to align Lake Vermilion State Park with the previous bill, as well as some of the ongoing work that we want to get done to the line shaft of the Vermilion Sedan State Park.
Are there questions on the amendment? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Eklund, please present your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1772 is a bill to appropriate money for needed repairs of the Vermilion Sedan underground mine. There's some information to be passed out with some pictures of the repairs that need to be done. The cost for this repairs for this miner is very high because the repairs can only be done in 20-foot increments on the shaft. A complete design cannot be done because the existing lining needs to be taken out one section at a time. The project will remove flammable material from the mine shaft and replace it with concrete. The Vermilion Sedan mine is very popular and we need to maintain it for future visitors. And one of the facts about this park is a lot of this land was donated by U.S. Steel to create the park, and if it is not kept in the condition that it's expected to be run in, the land may have to go back to U.S. Steel. We don't need that to happen. So with that, I'll let people take a look at the repairs, and I can stand for questions.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Backer.
So it's a one-time 9.5, and this summer Representative Fabian and I was down there with quite a few other people, and it was a great tour, but do we have a little better breakdown of what the 9.5, and all we see beams and stuff like that? Would someone have a better breakdown of, like, okay, we're going to use $2 million to shore up the steel structure of shaft, or Representative and Madam Chair, would anybody have that breakdown?
Part of the problem with that, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Backer, part of the problem with that is this is a real tough job to engineer because of taking it out in 20-foot increments, and it's an old mine shaft. You were there.
Yep.
I'm glad they didn't pack you in like they used to pack miners in.
I was real close to Representative Real close. So I'm glad he showered you that day.
So that's part of the trouble, and the nice thing about having the DNR here is you can go to the phone a friend thing for extra details. But it's real tough to engineer, and the other part of it is when they did some of the last repairs, there's only one or two contractors that have the experience to do this kind of work. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Leverzad.
Mr. Leverzad.
Madam Chair, committee members, our experience on the estimate for the Sudan underground mine shaft comes from an emergency repair that we conducted after a fire that took place at the mine in 2011. So in 2012, $2 million was appropriated to do an emergency repair on the most damaged part of the mine shaft. If you look at the illustration on the right-hand side of the page, that phase one was a $2 million repair, and as Representative Eklund stated, it was done as a design-build contract because there are so few experts, and you really don't know the conditions of what you're going to run into until you start reconstructing. The process is basically as he said, 20 feet at a time, you're removing the old damaged timber. When the mine was originally created, the rails, which run at an angle down into the mine shaft, were structurally put onto wooden timbers. And that was great for the first 150 years, but now those timbers are getting really, really brittle. Some sparks from some maintenance work caused the fire in 2011, and it took multiple days and 70,000 gallons of firefighting foam to get the fire out. We were very fortunate that we didn't have any people down in the mine on tours during that time. It happened during winter period. So our estimate of $4 million for repair is based on the amount of work that we did in 2012. remaining $5.5 million is for the campground.
Any further questions? Is there anyone in that? Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've had the opportunity to visit that facility a couple times, and I want to make the comment that ultimately getting as much wood out of there and replace it with concrete is a huge, huge safety factor. And this isn't, it's a different circumstance. We've got members of the general public that my wife was a little nervous about that. I mean, you know, you have people that never been that far down under the earth in that type of circumstance. So this is something that has got a huge safety important element, and it was a great opportunity for me because my dad worked underground for many years, but you know, they didn't let the kids follow dad down in the mines. So I got a chance to actually see some of the stuff that he dealt with when he worked in that environment. So yeah, we need to do this.
Representative Eklund, any closing remarks?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And this is, I recommend that anybody that goes to the Tower Sedan area, take this tour. It's definitely worth it. The zip to, I'm sure you'd like it. And we'd certainly hate to see this whole parkland revert back to U.S. Steel after all the work we've done on it, made it a beautiful park. So I appreciate the consideration, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. I renew my motion to the House File. House File 1772 is amended to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Representative Purcell. Move House File 1240 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Purcell, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Hopefully this will be the easiest bill of the night. I was approached by the Cross Country Ski Association, and they requested these fee increases. The money that go from the ski passes for cross country skiing goes into an account that's used for grooming these trails, etc. And as you can see, they're going from annual ski pass. It varies, but I'm not going to read it all to you. But it varies for 16 and over, going from 19 to 24, 3-year pass, $54 to $69. The cost in a daily pass from 5 to 9. So, put money into the cross country ski account, and that's all I have to say. Appreciate your support.
Thank you. And you have testifiers with you.
I do have some testifiers, Madam Chair, and I believe that we have an honorable guest here this evening, too, Mr. Darby Nelson, former state representative. Are you going to come up, too, if you want?
Welcome.
Come up here if you want, please.
Welcome. Welcome back. Please state your names for the record.
My name is Darby Nelson, it's great to be back. I say that because, as my wife can tell you and others, I carried a lot of stuff for years ago, running all kinds of different issues and so forth, and one of them was something that we want to talk about.
Yeah.
My wife Jerry here is going to speak for me. The Alzheimer's has taken its care, and it's very difficult for me to spend all of the language. That's why she's here and helping me as we go.
Thank you. And please
thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I'm Jerry Nelson. My husband, Darby, was elected to the Minnesota House in 1982. And the very first bill that he got passed was the original Minnesota Ski Pass Bill, 1983. The fees have been increased twice since then, in 1999 and 2010, and another increase is sorely needed. As an avid cross-country skier and racer, he appreciates the improvement, maintenance, and grooming of cross-country ski trails across the state that this fee supports. Darby has always credited Nordic skiing for maintaining its excellent health and wants other Minnesotans and tourists from other states and countries to enjoy the benefits of this great sport. Darby also represents the Minnesota Nordic Ski Association, which serves as an advocacy group for Nordic skiing across the state. He has been a board member since 2005. I urge you to support House File 1240. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming and for your testimony tonight.
One more testifier.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Neil Franz. I hail from Farming Township in beautiful Stearns County. And for the past 50 years, I've been a passionate Nordic ski enthusiast. Because of the years that I've spent both with our local club and in skiing generally, I was invited to serve on the board of the Minnesota Nordic Ski Association, and it is my distinct privilege to share in that capacity with Darby Nelson, who is truly one of the giants of Nordic skiing in Minnesota. As the advocacy voice for Nordic skiing in Minnesota, the Minnesota Nordic Ski Association primarily represents the clubs, which are situated throughout the state. These clubs, in turn, provide the work, the labor, the equipment, the investment to maintain more than 700 miles of grant and aid ski trails throughout the state. We appear here tonight in support of House File 1240, which proposes a modest increase in the Minnesota ski passes, which are paid by the Nordic ski enthusiasts to support the grant and aid trails. There are two primary reasons for the request today. The first and most obvious is that it's been nearly 10 years since we've had any increase in the fees, and during that period of time, all of the costs associated with maintenance have increased. We are aware that last year the legislature saw fit to provide trail fee increases for both the ATV community and snowmobiles. And because the work that Nordic Skiing does to maintain their trails is virtually indistinguishable to the work done by these other interest groups, we certainly believe that those increases were warranted. The second reason that I want to point out in justification for this increase is included in the governor's budget request, and I hope you all received a copy of a two-page document which includes a graph related to the dedicated ski fund. Under the original legislation, all money generated from the ski passes was required to go into the dedicated ski fund, and between 1983 and 2013, those funds were used exclusively to support grant and aid trails. In 2013, Chapter 114 of the session laws, the legislature in an appropriation bill authorized the DNR to receive an appropriation of $75,000 annually from that fund in order to help offset some of the costs of their grooming efforts in the state trails. MNSA supported that request when it happened, continues to support that request. However, the impact of that appropriation coming out of the dedicated cross-country ski track or ski account has created a situation where DNR estimates that given the rising costs of grooming and inflationary increases, the account is projected to go into deficit in the near future if there's not some adjustment made in the fees. For that reason, we ask your support in this fee increase for both the daily, the annual, and the three-year fees.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Friends. Ms. Nelson and Honorable Mr. Nelson, thank you for your leadership on this in the past. I've certainly benefited from the work that you've done, as well as many other Minnesotans. Thank you. Are there other questions from the committee? Representative Fabian.
Thank you. To the testifiers, you know, the cross-country ski issue is one that's been a contentious one in northwestern Minnesota because of a variety of issues, mainly having to do with, you know, DNR suspending the grooming of the trails. And we worked through a lot of different things to get the Parks and Trails Council to do some umbrella insurance. I'm not exactly sure. Commissioner Meyer could probably address that a little bit. I'm curious to know, though, now in statewide, how is the grooming done? Is it done primarily by volunteers? Is it done by DNR employees? Help me out.
I'm most familiar with the work done on the Grand Nade trails, which is primarily done by volunteers who are associated with local ski clubs. I am a member of two ski clubs. I'm a member of the Nordic Ski Club of Central Minnesota, which is stationed or in the St. Cloud area. But because I've got a cabin up north of Grand Rapids, I'm also a member of the Northern Lights Ski Touring Club. Both of them have extensive trail networks that they groom. In both cases, some of them are grant aid for which they receive some grants to work off of. The rest, they're simply on their own. So my information is primarily with the ski clubs, and that's mostly volunteer work.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not very familiar with cross-country skiing, so pardon my ignorance, but what percentage of the trails are on state land or in state parkland versus on private land or public parks that are not state land, that might be owned by the county or a city?
Mr. Franz?
I don't know that I can tell you that very clearly. I can give you the mileage. We have 700-plus miles in the GIA system. I believe most of that is a variety of public, county, and state lands. I know in our area it's primarily state and county lands that are subject to GIA grants. In the state parks, obviously, we've got about another 350 miles of groomed trails.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm just looking for some assurances from the agency that the grooming is going to continue in places like Lake Brunson State Park and Hayes and those. And I don't know if the agency wants to testify on that, but that's what I'm looking for.
And obviously, I can't speak for the DNR, but it is my information, and I believe it's in the government's request, that of the new funds expected to be generated by this increase, which would be about $70,000. The proposal is to take half of that money, have it available for the GIA trails, and half of it would be available to state park trails. So we'd be increasing their appropriation out of their annual appropriation out of the account from $75,000 to about $110,000.
Representative
Thank you, Madam Chair. You do a good job explaining that. Can we hear from DNR about the state park trails, please?
Thank you for coming back up, and please state your name again for the record.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Phil Leversedge, Deputy Director of the Division of Parks and Trails.
Deputy Director, Leversedge, you going to repeat my question? I'm just looking for assurances that we're going to continue having groomed trails in particularly the parks in my area, but they could be in a lot of other areas too.
Madam Chair, representatives, our plan with the increase in fees here is to sustain our trail system the way it is. We'll continue to groom some trails through partnerships, and we'll continue to invest in trails in our highest use state parks.
Representative Backer.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. If the fees were not included, you know, up there, what cutback would we see? It sounds like from your statement that we're not going to be able to do some. I mean, I don't like fees because it comes out of our constituents' pocket, but you know, give me a little, if we stay as another year or two like we are, what would we see, please?
Deputy Director Leverage.
Madam Chair, representatives, we'd see continued erosion in what we can provide for winter activities. Of course, our budget has to provide recreation during the entire year. We're going to put the priority on our highest use times. So if we're currently spending more on cross-country ski grooming than we're getting in grant in ski fees, I just want to make that clear. But if we continue to not see increases in the ski pass fee, we'll either have to lean more heavily on our general fund and state park operation funding, which would then reduce services in other times of the year, or it would reduce services in our lower use periods in certain places.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the committee? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill? Representative Purcell, any closing remarks?
Good bill.
Thank you for your brevity. I renew my motion that House File 1240 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over.
I couldn't think of a way, Madam Chair, to say damn, so I didn't.
Representative Wiginius.
I recognize that I'm last on the list. It's been a long day, but I would like to help file 2011 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. Please present your bill.
Many of you know, Minnehaha Creek runs through my district, and when I came to work this morning, I noted that it was at the very top of its banks. In the spring, that is not surprising, but it should be at a trickle in August, and it was at the top of its banks. And the same with September and October and November going into the winter. And this has been going on for several years, and the water. So, what is happening since my district has the choke point for Minnehaha Creek, which is Lake Hiawatha, we've got water backing up and water problems in my district. So the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District said, well, we've had a lot of rain. Well, we should be expecting a lot of rain in this day and age. So that prompted me to look at our watershed laws. And in my judgment, they are way out of date. I did not rewrite the watershed laws, but I did put some things in this bill that would update the watershed laws, and that's what I'd like to just go over with you now, very quickly. I'm adding things like looking at not just quality, but quantity, and you'll see that on line 1.14. And 1.19 to prevent erosion of soil, and of course, vegetation. When I was driving to work this morning, there was a great big orange fence along the creek and big equipment, and I suspect that a lot of the bank had fallen into the creek. So line 120 is slow the movement of water. That is now best practices. When this bill was written originally, probably in about 1990, that was not best practice. And if you will. So you just go through the bill, and I've added quantity, in a number of places. I will say, I shouldn't say I added it. Our very capable house researcher told me where to add it. But on page 3.8, you will see that I have language that says, provide recommendations to improve water quality and quantity from stormwater management from high rainfall events. And so we have high rainfall events again at the on page 4.6. And at the very end, the kind of language that I'm telling you about is repeated in several places, but at the very end, for watershed districts on line 6.23, that if you look at a specific purpose at the top of the page, a watershed district may be established for just one purpose, and all those purposes are listed here.
Sorry, Representative
Genius. I doubt it.
He just won the lottery.
Okay. But nothing about slowing the movement of water to protect surface waters and recharge groundwater resources, which would be best practices in this day and age. On line 6.25, if a watershed district is established for any of the reasons, which I think are old and should be rewritten, but we should also, a watershed district should adopt best practice to slow the movement of water to protect surface waters and recharge groundwater, because groundwater is oftentimes our drinking water. And that's it, and I'd be glad to take questions.
Are there questions here? Representative Backer?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Genius. In drafting the language, especially 6.25 to 6.27, who did you consult with in drafting that language?
Representative Genius?
Consult with. Who did you work with to draft up that language?
I asked our house researcher to help bring this language up to date with best practices. And very specifically, I asked for this.
Okay. Representative Becker?
So did you talk to any watershed districts out there, Madam Chair?
I talked to my watershed district so many times, I cannot tell you. We have regular conversations.
So Madam Chair, so you worked with your watershed district, but this goes across the state. I represent four watershed districts. Did you contact Boise Sioux or Buffalo Red River or any of those folks, or just in the metro?
The question here is it best practice in this day and age to do two things? It's to slow the movement of water, and for all the testimony we've had from all of our committees for years now, best practice, from Bowser included, is to slow the movement of water to protect surface water and to recharge groundwater resources. So if you disagree that that's not the best practice, then that's fine with me. But it is best practice.
Representative Backer.
And I appreciate that. I think that we're already doing it, but my question was, is your focus on drafting this bill was with health research and your local watershed district. That was your focus, because that was my question to Representative.
I have sat on this committee for a number of years, and for a number of years we have had testimony about best practices. We did not used to slow water down to recharge groundwater. And I would say starting maybe 6 years ago, 8 years ago, we started saying that is now best practice. So what surprised me is when I looked at this language, best practice wasn't in it. But we have had those conversations in this committee and in other committees. I would say, well, I know we talked a lot about groundwater when the White Bear Lake issue came up, and we had extensive hearings then, and during those extensive hearings, we were talking about best practice is to slow the water down, to recharge groundwater, because we don't know across the state how our aquifers are doing. but we do know our citizens do drink groundwater from our aquifers, and we've never had the money or the time or the inclination to test them all with geologic atlases, and we certainly haven't had a chance to look at the recharge of all of our aquifers. But we know that some of them are going down, and that's not good for people who want to use their aquifers for drinking water or irrigation or anything else.
Representative Backer.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, but the concern I have, and I feel that you're avoiding the question, is who else do you consult with? Because I know with the Association Watershed, they have great concerns about this. So it sounds like that your focus was in, I'm just having this dialogue here, that your focus was in more consulting with the Metro Watershed Districts, and we already are doing this out where I'm at. So, like, where, because you have a cabin out in Hoffman, Minnesota, don't you?
I don't have a cabin.
Oh, okay, I thought you did.
Farm.
Okay, a farm or something like that. Water, you know, we're already doing that out there. So, what my concern is with this bill is this is going to have a big impact, and we're not bringing everybody in different parts. What's up in Representative Fabian's district is different than in my district a little bit, and southern Minnesota. So when we're just consulting house research, I'm really concerned that we're just, again, putting a stamp saying, hey, this will work for everybody. And we haven't even calculated the cost of any of this.
Representative McGinnis.
Thank you. Let's not blame House Research. I'd ask them to draft this to reflect this. They did a good job in capturing what I said. Now, if watershed districts did not like that, they could be sitting here and we could be having that discussion. But they are not here having that discussion. And let's not say that I am doing this just for my own watershed district. My own watershed district prompted me to look at the law to see what the law was saying. I hadn't looked at the law before, and that my watershed district prompted me to do it. When I read it, I said, this is not reflecting. This is 1990s. This is not reflecting best practices today, and that's what's here. You may vote against it, but that's how I came to do it.
Representative Becker.
And I appreciate where you're coming from. My concern here is when we draft up bills, we want to go out to all the stakeholders. We don't just go and say, hey, one section, say, hey, this is how would you recommend to do that? So I don't think it's fair to say that because the Watershed District Association is not sitting up here, that they're okay with it. I just think, you know, if you're going to draft a bill that's going to have a huge impact, we don't even have an idea of cost, that we really need to get all stakeholders from north to south, east to west. That is my concern, because that is what we're supposed to do as legislators. You know, my first year here, I learned that the hard way. So you got to bring all the stakeholders in. And to me, how it looks for me is not all the stakeholders, every single watershed district, because I've heard that the Association Watershed Districts have some concerns about this. So I'll leave it at that.
Representative Rodriguez.
That's fine.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, remind me, what's our motion on this bill?
To be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Wagenius, who said we get to vote against this bill, we won't. It's being laid over. And I think if it's in a finance committee, then we can quite rightfully assume that there's going to be costs incurred here. Where's the fiscal note?
Representative Wagenius?
If this is to be included, there will be a fiscal note, I'm sure. Let's think about the downside of not having best practices. I mean, in ag, you would argue for best practices. But the downside of not having best practices is that we're not recharging our aquifers. And let's talk about the cost of that. And let's talk about the cost of that to farmers. Let's talk about that look at what's happening in Canandaigua, Ohio County, where there's well interference going on there. Let's look at what happened in the White Bear Lake, where the aquifer is, we've had aquifer problems. We're now starting to see those problems because we were pushing the water off the land so fast and not thinking about, we've got to recharge that aquifer because that aquifer is our drinking water, it's our irrigation water, which the water farmers are going to need. So I'm just talking about best practices here, and I'm not
going
to repeat that again.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think watersheds are represented here this evening. Could we have them come to the table, please?
There were also other questions from the committee. Representative Fisher.
All right. Let him go ahead and finish.
And if you would introduce yourself for the record, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Guinness. I'm Ray Vaughn. I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. And I think in the policy committee, we had some discussion about this, and our executive director articulated some concerns she had with the bill, or we had with the bill. Since that time, we have circulated this to our watershed districts and also the WMOs in the Twin Cities area and asked them what their thoughts are, and we are starting to get that feedback now. And I guess my major concern, just by looking at the bill, is you deal with Chapter 103B issues. In Chapter 103B, watershed districts have a different funding mechanism than the Chapter 103D ones. The last page, it reflects to Chapter 103D, 201. When you add things to that, that means there's going to be additional costs. And the problem, frankly, the problem I have is we've been floating a bill around the Capitol to try to get some authorship on to increase our levy from $250,000 to $500,000 just for basic administration and to be able to run our watershed district. And no one will sign it. No one will sign it. But, you know, we're imposing more costs and more work on us. So I would like to have a discussion about that, but I'd like to do that in tandem with how the 103D, which are basically your rural watershed districts, how they're going to be affected and whether or not they can take on these additional tasks. I'm not saying these are bad ideas. I'm just saying in the context of everything else, you know, it's going to cost money.
Representative Guinness.
I would share with you, members, that if you are going to be doing any of these things in this list, it is going to cost money. So as you are doing those things, think about the implications of what you're doing. And the implications of what you're doing should not be to not recharge your aquifers, and it should not be to contaminate your surface water. So it's best practice, and if somebody's going to take on any of these, so if you look at the list, members, you can see that on line 6.19, you can create a watershed district to provide for hydroelectric power generation. You don't have to create a watershed, you can create it for that and no other purpose. But as you are doing that and spending the money, should you be also doing best practices? You can create a watershed, look at 6.9. You can create a watershed district to divert or change all or part of a water course. At that time, should you be thinking of best practices and making sure that your aquifers are recharged and you're not doing anything to harm your surface water. So this is not a separate thing, rather that it is a thing that should be done as best practices when you're doing anything else.
Well, I think at a minimum the last provision, the 6.5 to 6.27 is in the wrong area. I think that should be part of the plan, not part of the reasons you established a watershed district. And I think it's out of place from a statute standpoint. And if you want to make it a best practice, and that should be a requirement of the plan, not of the reasons to establish a watershed district.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of comments as I'm hearing a little bit about cost, what this might cost districts. And I think one of the questions we should be asking is, what are the costs to us as a society if we don't do it? Because there's something about slowing water on the land that we haven't discussed yet at this point, but we should, is what does it do to erosion downstream? We had a bill here earlier this evening. It was House File 2432 about having to do money for dredging in the Minnesota River. Because, and we heard how often the frequencies that they have to dredge these days. And a lot of that is happening because the amount of flow that is coming through the Mississippi River. We've done less to slow the water down over the years, and we've had more instances of more intense rain, and we've not looked at the problem of slowing the water down. By slowing the water down, that in that watershed, it would then reduce the cost that they would need for dredging on the river. So when you talk about costs, let's not forget about these other costs that are involved in the processes, that it also contributes to some of the flooding and erosion that we have happening in our watersheds.
Representative Backer.
Madam Chair and Representative Fisher, I appreciate that. One thing, though, what I don't like the tone is this, it seems to me, and I could be wrong, is the assumption that they're not doing best management practice. I just did, up in Traverse County, we did a couple years ago, North Ottawa project. That's a huge impoundment project. We do that on small scale, you know, and so forth in our district. So I don't want the idea that this is not already be done. My concern is that we have not brought in all the stakeholders, because ag wants to keep the water on the land because it's a whole lot cheaper to keep that instead of irrigation and so forth. So I just want to make a comment that where I'm out from my district that I'm at, it is important to keep water on the land, because especially when the water runs, the soil leaves, and that's their livelihood. So just a comment there. Thank you.
Thank you for making the case for the bill.
Madam Chair, I think what, you know, I guess we can talk about these things. I would agree with what Backer said. Much of this is taking place now. But you know, what's a bit frustrating, I think, to watershed districts is that last night, when the Clean Water Fund bill was laid out, all the conservation drainage money was eliminated. Well, that's a huge issue for us in rural Minnesota. How do you slow that water down? How do you, you know, do the best conservation practices you can? And that money was actually put in, to try to do research and figure out how to do that. And actually, the Department of Ag has come up with some really good reasons. And to take that money out of the budget is just, I mean, I don't know. That doesn't make any sense. Because that takes away the research we need to have done to make sure that we can best know what the best management practices are and then implement those. Now we've got to go back and fight to get that little bit of money, what is it, $5-6 million back, try to get it back. And that, to me, we need to be consistent in this. And I think drainage is one of the issues that we need to be talking about, and the drainage work group works real hard to try to figure out some solutions to some of those. But that's just one example I can come off of the top of my head that is frankly discouraging to me. And I think the rural watershed districts who are working on the drainage issue and trying to figure that stuff out and trying to figure out how we can hold the land back or hold the water back on the land and slow it down, because we know it needs to be slowed down, because otherwise it rips the banks off and that causes more erosion. And the whole issue with the lower Minnesota River is that that problem starts up at the South Dakota border. And all that dredge is coming from the South Dakota border on down. So it's not just the watershed district's problem, but it's their problem because it lands on their lap. And they have to deal with it. And that's the argument we've made with that watershed district over the last few years, is that state needs to help with this because they're getting this problem dumped in their lap. And you got major companies there, Cargill and some of the big grain companies, whatever. What role do they have in all that as well, in terms of help cleaning that out? Because they, it's their barges that use it. So anyway, I think at a minimum that language needs to be moved 6.25 to 6.27 into its appropriate statute, which would be, in fact, the planning statute for watershed districts. And if you look at how we put together the One Watershed, One Plan, one of the things we do is we do a comprehensive plan, and we look at all these issues, and we look at these mismanagement practices. So to say it isn't being done is really not knowing what's really being done out there, because it is being done, and it's being planned for. And again, every watershed district was created for a specific reason. I don't think there's been any hydroelectric ones created, but there's been some that were created just to save lakes. Some were created to build a new dam. But yet, I mean, in 25 years I've been with the watershed districts, they have changed immensely. They were little sleepy hollows when I started. And frankly, now some of them are just, it's unbelievable what they can do and what they are doing. But we need the resources, especially rural Minnesota needs the resources to do these things.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bowen addressed my issue that had to do with what happened with the clean water yesterday.
Is there anyone from the audience who'd like to testify for or against this bill? Any further questions from the committee? Representative Gaines, would you like to make any closing remarks?
I would appreciate the support in laying it over.
Thank you. Would you like to renew your motion?
I would renew my motion that House File 2011 be laid over for possible inclusion.
That bill is laid over. Seeing no other business, we are adjourned.